Motu and the Roadhouse Jesters at McGuire's in Bohemia. Afterglow Radio, Igor's Egg, Juke, the Concentrics, and Daredevil Squadron, etc. Sullivan Hall, and Howard Seal at Harbor Crab and Patchogue, and that's a 6 p.m. start. And don't forget to tune in to our Blues Marathon starting this Thursday morning and heading going all the way until Saturday night at midnight. And thank you again for listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook, whether you like it or not. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. Yes, that's the sound of the phone ringing in North Korea, somewhere. Did we check to see what time it is over there? I guess we're... Might not be convenient, but, well, the thing is, they get up very early over there, so I don't feel that guilty. But, wow, we actually got through. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting to play a recording saying that... you can't get through now, and that would have sounded cool with the music underneath, but, you know, the ring sounds good, too. Let's hope it answers. You know, we tried this last week, and we never got a ring. Maybe this means things are opening up more over there. Sounds so lonely, doesn't it? Okay, well, if they do pick up, we'll jump right into a conversation. Of course, that's assuming they speak English or I suddenly pick up Korean. Yeah, well, you know, maybe the reason why they haven't gotten to the phone yet is because it's the eve of the big game, which takes place tomorrow. Tomorrow. Actually, it doesn't take place in North Korea this time. It takes place in Riyadh. In Saudi Arabia, where basically it all comes down to this. If North Korea are able to beat Saudi Arabia, or I believe even tie them, they will advance to the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. And not since 1966 has North Korea made it to the World Cup Finals. And then they really surprised a lot of people. I think they beat Italy. They beat a bunch of people. But more importantly, it'll put Kim Jong-il in a good mood, and maybe he'll release those journalists and stop firing missiles up in the air and saying hurtful things to other people in the world. You'd be amazed what a soccer game can do. But here's the problem, and maybe some of our listeners can help with this. Last time, about a week ago, when... was it a week ago? It was 2 weeks ago? I don't know. The big game, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, where North Korea were playing Iran live from Pyongyang. I was able to watch it on television at 4 in the morning. And that was really cool. It ended in a scoreless tie, which was a little dull, I guess. But I was able to watch it on television. And I can't find this game, which is going to decide everything. I can't find this game anywhere on any network. I get two satellite systems and two cable networks that I have access to, and I can't find a single channel anywhere that is covering this. So if you know of something, some sports network someplace, and there are so many of them, everything is covered at some point, that's covering Wednesday's game. Actually, I think it's the 17th. So yeah, it's tomorrow. So it will be Wednesday for us as well. Taking place in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, between the Saudi Arabian national team and the Korean Democratic People's Republic. Please let me know. OTW@2600.com. I'd really like to see this live. Or maybe you can see it on the internet. I don't know. I wasn't able to find any details about that either. But yeah, it makes a difference. It really does. You know, it's incredible. I can call locally, and Verizon will cut me off after about 10 rings if nobody picks up. Here I am, taking up probably 50% of the bandwidth from here to North Korea, and they're not cutting me off because no one's picking up. I find that incredible. Will I let the phone ring for the entire hour? Who knows? It's entirely possible. This, so that people know, this is ringing somewhere in a hotel. Oh, dear. I spoke too soon. They disconnected me right when I said that. Okay, well, you know what? I'm just going to pick up the phone and dial it again. What do you think about that? We'll never get through again. I know this. But it's worth trying. Yeah, that's strange that it didn't pick up. It is very strange, right? I guess if this doesn't work, maybe I have a bad number and I'll try a different number next week. Oh, I got through again. Wow. This is unusual. I've been trying this number off and on during the last week, and always getting a recording saying my call either couldn't be completed as dialed, which implied that I dialed it wrong, which I did not, or that my call did not go through, which is usually what happens. Okay, well, we'll let this go. We'll let this go for a while. It's kind of annoying, and I'll turn it down. How about that? All right. We'll be taking phone calls, too, a little bit later on. 631-632-9872 is our telephone number. We'd especially welcome calls from North Korea, if anyone is out there. Yeah, I know nobody's out there. It's tough, because, you know, I was in North Korea, and internet access simply is not to be had. It's that simple. The best you can do is go to a hotel lobby and write a message, which gets stored in somebody's Outlook account, which eventually gets batched and sent out with a whole lot of other email messages. It's hard to get a reply, too. What a week this has been. This has been an incredible week on many levels. It's that time of year where... it's beyond spring having sprung, but there's a lot of life in the air. You know, there's a lot of wildlife fluttering about. Trees are completely either blossoming or they have their leaves out. And you tend to have, this is a time of year where you tend to have surprise encounters with various representatives of nature. And I've had a few of those. Basically, I spend time in the city. I spend time out here on Long Island, and in both places, you have different kinds of encounters with various representatives of the animal kingdom. And what I'd like to focus on this week are some of the insect representatives that that you might find. They're all different, phases of the year. There's the time of year where you see a particular type of ant just suddenly appear, and yeah, they get into the house sometimes, and it's a real pain. Then you get the carpenter ants later on in the summer, and they just run around on everything, and that's another pain. Sometimes a bunch of flies just appear out of nowhere because something hatched. Then you get the spiders, and you get the crickets later on in the year. One thing that I've seen, which is particularly annoying because this happens throughout the winter as well, are millipedes. Have you seen millipedes? They're kind of creepy. They're kind of creepy because, and they only really have a million legs. They don't have a million legs. They have a lot of legs. And they look kind of like worms, but when you touch them, they coil up into a little spiral type of thing. And I guess that's their way of protecting themselves. It doesn't work very well. So those appear during the winter. I think what they're looking for is warmth and maybe some water or something like that. And basically... See, I try to save as much life as possible. I know, I'm a real sucker as far as this kind of thing goes. Because people have no trouble stepping on insects and squishing them. And, you know, I used to do that when I was a kid. I used to just mash all kinds of bugs. And I was really kind of tormenting them. I would take live ants and throw them into spider webs. And just watch the fun, you know? Just watch what happens. And I guess there's something a psychologist would find troubling in that. I'd probably today get some kind of drug for that. Because that's what happens. Any kind of antisocial behavior. Is it antisocial behavior to throw an ant in a spider web? I mean, we're not supposed to be socializing with ants anyway. I think that's something more to be concerned with if you spend an undue amount of time with ants. But, yeah, you know, if there's any kind of antisocial behavior, the solution is to take some Ritalin or something like that, and, yeah, the problem will all go away. It's something I've never really bought into. But, yeah, you know, in my later years, I've developed this softness for any kind of... I believe in giving creatures a chance. You know, okay, you're in the house... Get out of the house. If you come back... Oh, it disconnected again. You know what? We'll call back later on, because I know it's annoying to hear North Korean rings throughout the entire show, but we'll try it later on. Maybe they're in the bathroom or something, and they'll be out by the time we call. So I basically like to give these insects or creatures of various sorts as much of an opportunity as possible to correct their mistakes, up to a point. Up to a point. You know, I'll grab a millipede... It'll coil up, I'll grab it in my hand, and I'll just throw it out, you know, into the forest and say, okay, go have a nice life. Don't let me see you here again. Of course, then I see another one. I'm not sure it's the same one. It probably isn't. But after a while, after this keeps happening and happening, you say, you know what, I'm fed up. And then you start flushing them or squishing them. Yes, I'll squish an ant. I have to, because sometimes there are just too many of them. You try and you do as much as you can. To make your inside location as unpalatable as possible. And I don't like to spray. I don't like to spray insecticides and poison and things like that because, you know, there's other life forms around that you don't want to get rid of, such as people and bigger animals and things like that. Bigger animals that you've invited into your home, not like the errant raccoons or possums that get in. That's not cool at all. But, you know, I try really hard to be as nice as possible. Spiders, I get along with spiders. I like spiders. I know, they flip people out. I don't know why. I'm not exactly sure why. I think it's something that's programmed into us. And I realize I know a lot of people who are deathly afraid of various kinds of insects. Not that spiders are insects. I know this. Let's not have that discussion. But certain types of creepy crawly bugs and things, people have manias. Once I was driving with a friend of mine in a car on a highway, and I have what are known as car spiders. Car spiders are a little bit translucent. They live in your car. They really do. And if your car spends a lot of time in a wooded area, then these spiders come down from the trees, and they live in the car. And it's perfectly okay. Apparently they can do business there, and it's comfortable for them. And I see these spiders no matter where I drive. I could drive my car to Mexico. and I will see a spider that came from Long Island, perfectly happy, living in the car. And you know what? There's a kind of symmetry to that. That's fine. No problem. I just would appreciate spiders not, you know, dropping in front of my eyes while I'm driving with their web thing going on, because that's kind of distracting. But I've been driving with people where they suddenly see a spider, and, you know, we're going 55 miles an hour on a highway, and they're one step away from jumping out of the car. That's how touched they are by this. And it's interesting to see how these things develop. I've known people who have been deathly afraid of caterpillars, of worms of any kind, ants, moths. Okay, moths are interesting stories, because this is the time of year where they're fluttering all over the place. They're just coming out of whatever they come out of, and they keep trying to get into your house because you have a light on or something. They come from miles around. You have to wonder, in a forest where there are no light bulbs, what do moths normally do? What do they do for fun? There's no light. What, are they trying to get to the moon, perhaps? Where do they just hang out and wait for somebody to turn something on so they can fly towards it? I've often wondered this. The other day, there was an incident. There was an incident where there was a light on inside my house. In fact, there are a lot of lights on inside my house. That's how it works. And the first indication that something was going on was this kind of batting noise against the window. I'm sure we've all heard it, where a moth just keeps hitting himself or herself against the window, trying to get in, or just thinking that that's going to somehow work, not knowing any better. Well, in this particular case, I happened to take a look, and I said, wow, my God, that is one big moth. It was huge. It was a huge moth trying to bat himself through the window to the light that was on. It was bird size. That's how big. And in the middle of the night, so it was kind of creepy and scary. And the cat took a very keen interest in this as well. Cat walked up to the window and started looking at this moth trying to get in and hoping that the moth somehow succeeded. And this went on for a good 15-20 minutes or so. Just the two of them watching the moth's attempts to get into the house. I wasn't concerned with this because I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. I knew that there was no way a moth can get through a glass window. So some time passed. The cat moved on to a different window that actually had that was open but had a screen down. And I could see that the cat was getting kind of frustrated because he wanted to get to something that was outside and there was a screen in the way. So he's basically clawing the screen, pushing the screen, trying to climb up the screen. I know that's not going to go anywhere either. There's no way the cat can open up a screen. But apparently what the cat was able to do was push the screen enough to create a small opening. And what I had not known at the time was that the cat and the huge moth were working together to do this. The moth had gone over to that other window. I don't know if the cat invited him over there or they just reached the same conclusion at the same time. And the cat is pushing on the screen, and the moth is trying to squeeze himself through, and he succeeded. Next thing I knew, there's this huge moth inside the house. And I'm like, oh my God, cat, what have you done? Do you realize this thing is, it's as big as a bird? It looks like a bat. Thank God it wasn't. It could have been a bat, but no, they don't really do moth-type things. And he's flying around now, hitting himself into the overhanging lamp. And I'm just thinking, my God, how am I going to get this thing out of here? I'm going to need some kind of butterfly net, which I imagine you can probably use for moths as well, but I don't have one. I'm going to have to go out to the store, which is not open now, which means I have to do this tomorrow. Thanks a lot. I have another errand to run now. So what happened was this went on for only about 10 minutes or so, 10, maybe 12 minutes. Then the moth just, like, goes to the wall and just settles on the wall, as high up as you can possibly imagine. I couldn't reach him. But he just lands there and stops. Doesn't move for the whole rest of the night. I was waiting for him to start flying again so I could open up a window and shoo him out and hope that no other creatures came in. But he didn't move. It was like, okay, I just wanted to be near the light. Now I'm here. I'm going to take a nice long nap. And eventually, you know, the cat was standing on 2 feet trying to get to this thing. And not having any luck, he was very frustrated, looking at me like it's my fault. So finally, as dawn approached, I realized, you know, this. I want for this moth to make it. I really do. He's huge. He's really enterprising. But I want for him to be able to go back out and be a moth outside. Be a huge moth outside. King of the moths. So what I did was I basically left the screen open a crack. A crack that's big enough for a moth to get through, not big enough for a cat to get through. I turned off all the lights, sealed off the room so that he wouldn't go into other rooms. And woke up the next day hoping to find him gone. And when I looked in the space where he had been resting. He was not there. He was not there anymore. However, I'm sorry. However, when I looked on the floor, I saw huge, huge pieces of moth wings on the floor. A very smug-looking cat, who had apparently waited hours and hours and hours for the moth to wake up from his slumber and start foolishly flying around again. He didn't stand a chance. I try to help out nature wherever I can. It doesn't always work out. But, you know, you got to just try. You got to just know that you did all you could to save as many bugs as possible. All right. So, that's the kind of year. This is the time of year it is. And it's really, really kind of neat. Kind of neat to see all these things happening. Okay. You know what? I saw a film. I saw a film yesterday. Oh, boy. It was The Taking of Pelham 123. You know, I had to see it. I had to see it because it's one of those movies about subways. I love subways. Love New York City subways. And I have to see these things when they come out because I have to see if they get it right. Even though if I know it's not going to be completely right, then, you know, it's something that I'd like to be able to point out the problems. And wow, okay, it's good to see a film that has to do with New York City. It's good to see a film that has to do with subways. It's good to be able to be on the edge of your seat. But you know, there's not much point. There's not much point in having something that's already been done right done again. Now, The Taking of Pelham 123 was made, I think, what, in 1974. It is a brilliant film. It's about these people who hijack a subway train. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you hijack a subway train? I won't ruin it for you, but it's an amazing story. In 1974, it's an amazing story because it's done well, and it's accurate for the most part. There are some things that are wrong, and it's hard to get everything right. I know that. But there are some things that most things are really pretty good and accurate. And it's also nice to look back in 1974 and see the subway system at work. See how it looked back then. They remade this film as an ABC TV movie back in the 90s, and it was awful. They didn't even film it in New York. They filmed it in Toronto. So it didn't look at all like a New York City subway system. This one that just came out with Denzel Washington and John Travolta, it was filmed in New York. It was filmed inside the system. They had unprecedented access to the subway system, so that was pretty cool. But my God, the things they got wrong that they didn't have to get wrong, and I don't understand it. It just frustrates me so much. For instance, and I'll try not to ruin things too much with this description, but basically, when you see a subway car, and they did this in the opening credits, you see a subway car coming into the station or passing by, they play the sound of a horn. Now, subways don't really blow their horns all that often unless there's work on the tracks, or if they're not going to stop at the station, they'll toot the horn a couple of times. But they had the wrong horn. They had the horn of a regular outdoor-type train, you know, like the LIRR or something like that, or a freight train. Why couldn't they just play the right horn, the one that sounds like a subway car? Did they not know that it had a different sound? You know, something like this, it's just so simple to get it right. And I have to wonder why they didn't. All right, now, there was this whole other thing. Now, the mayor was played by Tony Soprano. Okay, you know, the guy who plays Tony Soprano, James Gandolfini. And he did a very good job, sort of a combo between Bloomberg and Giuliani. But there was one thing that really frustrated me here, too. He was, I think he was somewhere in the Bronx. Now, the train that gets hijacked is the number 6 train. It's the Pelham local. And the reason they call it Pelham 123, it's supposed to leave Pelham, which is the first stop in the Bronx, supposed to leave there at 123. That's why it's called Pelham 123. Now, he's in the Bronx, and he's riding on a subway train, much in the way that that Bloomberg rides a subway every day. And Bloomberg also gets paid, what is it, $1 a year? Because he can afford to get paid $1 a year to be mayor of New York. It's like, you know, it's like a dream come true for him. So basically, he's on a subway car. Now, you know, if Bloomberg is on a subway car, he goes to work every day on the subway, they're not going to just have regular passengers sitting next to him. They're not. But in the film, they make it like regular passengers are not only sitting next to him, but hearing his private conversations and his strategies and all kinds of things like that. Doesn't make any sense. It's a stupid thing to do if you're a mayor of a city, to be basically speaking your mind in front of the constituents, because you know one of them is going to be a reporter or is going to have a blog or something like that. But here's the thing that really got me upset. When he finds out about the hijacking, and the train gets hijacked, basically they separate all the cars except the first one, and then obviously when that happens, trains can't move on that track. Trains can't move on the track because it's stopped there. The first car is sitting there with all the hostages. The other car has, I think, gone back to the station. That's another thing I had a problem with. That car, those series of cars, I guess it was about 9 cars, went in the other direction, backwards. Who was driving? Who was driving that train? It didn't make any sense. Was it going down a hill? If it went down a hill, what stopped it? And future shots of the of the one car with the hostages had the front of the car facing downhill. So that didn't make any sense either. So it couldn't have been going downhill. I don't know. Those kind of things just kind of annoy me. But here's the thing. When the mayor was about to head downtown to where the crisis was, he said, you know what, let's take the subway instead because we'll get there faster rather than dealing with traffic. Okay, great. Nice little joke there. But he gets on the same line. He gets on the number 6 train heading downtown. Now, the number 6 train will be blocked because of the tracks that are closed. Makes no sense. Now, here's another thing that makes no sense. All right, you have the situation where you have armed people holding hostages on a subway car in a subway tunnel. Do you have trains going past it with passengers? Apparently, yes, you do in this movie. In this movie world, you have the subway system running as if nothing is wrong, and you have other innocent people just passing right by the armed men with guns who could shoot at them at any moment. And the armed men with guns, they don't find anything wrong with that either. In fact, they even turn off the power, yet somehow those trains are able to continue running. Whatever. You know, people say to me, Emmanuel, you know, it's only a film. I know it's only a film. I know it's only a film. I can tell the difference between reality and fiction as much as anyone. But all I'm saying is, if you're going to make a film that's based on reality, shouldn't it be somewhat realistic? And is it wrong to point out things that are obviously unrealistic and stupid? Like, for instance, there's a point where this dumb kid is on his laptop, and he's communicating with his stupid girlfriend somewhere in the metropolitan area. And, you know, his life is in danger. This is after the hijacking, after they're being held hostage, after he's had a gun held to his head. She wants him to say that he loves her and gets really pissy when he's saying that he has a bit going on right now. But he's somehow able to talk to her inside a subway tunnel when there's no internet access. How is that possible? How is that possible that he's able to do this? Now, and this was actually kind of interesting, the hijackers set up a Wi-Fi access point inside the tunnel system. They actually have this set up. Okay, that's fortuitous on their part. They're able to watch the news reports as the crisis unfolds. And as part of the plot reveals, the stock market. They're able to watch the stock market, how it is affected by all this. So that's part of the whole scheme. Okay, so you have this laptop which has been thrown to the floor, complete with its camera, but it's still connected somehow. It's still connected. And then it hops onto that access point that apparently these hijackers have put into place. So now the girlfriend is able to see the guy and the whole subway car and is able to put it out on the internet. And then TV stations pick it up and they're able to watch live what's going on the hijacked subway car. Now, the people in the control room back in this science fiction-ish control center that the MTA apparently has someplace downtown, they're able to watch all the TV stations and see what's going on in the subway car because they're able to look at this camera that's on the laptop. So when somebody says, do they have internet access? How is this guy, how is this one of these hijackers able to know who it is he's talking to on the dispatch? So it's like he's looked up their name, but do they have internet access there? No, of course not. There's no internet access. Most definitely not. Okay, but you're looking at an internet feed from the subway car. At that very moment, you are watching an internet feed. So how can anyone say there's no internet access? Obviously, there is internet access because you're looking at it. It's only, what, one-way internet access? We can see them, and they can send to us, but we can't. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid, and it's worth commenting on. Obviously, there's internet. We don't know how there's internet access in the tunnel, but there is. And not to mention the fact that there somehow was before, when I guess they were establishing that this guy was talking to his girlfriend on the subway train. Now, a lot of problems with that laptop scenario. There's one point where it gets finally noticed by one of the hijackers, who doesn't seem to think it's a big deal at all. I guess being identified and having your name figured out is not something to worry about. And he kicks it at the very moment the battery dies. The same moment that the guy kicks it, the battery goes down to zero. And then later on, somehow the guy's on the laptop again. It somehow is reborn. Crazy. Makes no sense. Another thing that makes no sense, you're standing there in the front, you know all the snipers are watching you, they can see your face, obviously they can identify you that way as well, even if there isn't a laptop taking photos of the whole thing. So how do you expect to get away? You know, the guy steals all this money by investing in gold or something, and gold prices go up because of the hijacking. I don't know, he's got it all figured out, he's a stockbroker. So somehow he thinks that even though people know who he is, or maybe he doesn't realize people know who he is, he's going to be able to just walk away from that and withdraw money later on without anybody freezing that account. Doesn't make sense. And, you know, I'm not even going to get into the corny ending. Oh, my God, super corny ending. No, I'm not even going to get into that. That's a stylistic thing. You know, I'm not going to get into the opening credits and how annoying they were. Stylistic thing, you know. You have the opportunity to make a good film or a cheesy film. But, correct me if I'm wrong, there seemed to be a whole lot of this film that was cut. Now, never mind the fact that when they finally start moving, when the hijackers get off the train and send it on its way, just like in the original film, and it's going through all these green signals because they commanded that there not be any red signals, somehow the number 6 train is on its way to Coney Island, when no number 6 train has ever gone to Coney Island before. But, you know, I can suspend my disbelief for that. And there's a technical reason for that, too. The number 6 train, as all number trains, are part of something known as the IRT, Interborough Rapid Transit System. They don't really call it that anymore, but there is a difference in the three old systems that exist in the subway system. There's the BMT, the IND, and the IRT. Now, the BMT and the IND are pretty much the same. Independent system and the, Brooklyn-Manhattan Transit. Now, the IRT, Interborough Rapid Transit, was always a little bit different. Their cars are narrower, which is why you never see a numbered train swapped in for a lettered train. The number trains have always been different. If you had a numbered train go on a lettered train track, there would be too much of a gap between the platform and the train. Too much. And if vice versa, well, that couldn't happen at all. They wouldn't fit. They'd collide with the platform, or they wouldn't fit through the tunnel. Okay, so you don't cross those two. You don't ever do that. Okay, you know what? I can let that go by. What I can't let go by, though, is how did the number 6 train, on its way to Coney Island, heading downtown Manhattan, somehow pass Shea Stadium in Queens? That doesn't make any sense at all. Except when you realize that they had to film it on the number 7 line, which is in Queens, because that's an IRT line. they could have changed it. They could have made it the 7 train or something. But no, they didn't do that. But the thing that really gets me about all this, and yeah, I know I'm taking this to the point of absurdity, but it has to be said. It has to be said. The part I thought I was missing was somebody saying they're not on the train anymore. Throw the red light on so that the train will stop before it careens off onto Nathan's at Coney Island. At some point, unless I blacked out for a sec, at some point they hit a red signal and the train comes to a stop, and everyone has a good-natured laugh about the close call they had, and I guess they forget about the dead bodies that are in the train car with them because they just seem to be in such a good mood at being alive. But somehow that train stopped on a red signal, and I don't recall seeing anybody saying, make sure those lights turn red now. So we missed a whole section. Very, very weird. Other things like, shootouts with cops. You ever see this with cops on both sides of bad people, and they're shooting straight ahead, and somehow not hitting each other? Or a shootout with machine guns on a subway car, where nobody seems to be concerned about ricocheting bullets. You know, it's... And something else. You know, I'm on a roll here, but when they transported the money... And yeah, I know, they didn't use a helicopter. They even made reference to that themselves. Good for them for making reference to that. But why did they take a traffic car instead of an NYPD car? It doesn't make sense. You know, those brown cars that are for writing tickets. It just seemed kind of silly. I guess that's pretty much it. I saw a continuity issue at one point where they're monitoring the stock market going down by over 1,000 points. And then... later, inexplicably, it's only down by, say, 70 points, which was what it was at the beginning of the film. I think they just missed the shot because a little later on it's down by 1,000 points again. So that's just sloppiness. That's just something that they should have looked more carefully or asked me or something. But the other thing that makes very little sense to me was at the end, and I'm sorry, this is going to be a spoiler for those people who have not seen it, when Denzel Washington is running across the Manhattan Bridge to catch up with John Travolta, who, by the way, I don't even know why he's holding on to the $3 million in the bag when he's just made something like $300 million in the stock market. Doesn't make sense. He could throw it off into the East River. But there's no reason for Denzel Washington to be chasing him in the first place. They know who this guy is. They've managed to identify him suspiciously easily, and they'll simply catch him at the next opportune moment. So all of that drama was rather unneeded. There was an incident also where Denzel Washington had to deliver the money down in the subway tunnel, and he had one of these cool little wagons, you know, like the kind you see in the silent movies, where there's two people sitting on them, and they have to push up and down, and they go down the track. It wasn't quite like that. You basically had to push it down the track yourself. It's a one-person thing. It's like having, I don't know, one of those, it's like a grocery cart on a track. But somehow, they just happened to have one of those lying around, and that was how he got the money down the subway track to where the train was parked. I thought that was kind of cool. I don't know, I guess that's pretty much it. This is why I don't see films very often, because, the thing is, this struck a personal chord because it had something to do with trains in New York City, and I just like to see it done right. And it could have been done right. All these little points I made, I think, are very easy to fix without compromising the film in any way, and in fact, enhancing the film. That's what I think. All right. Now, if there are so many listeners out there who have not been totally annoyed by me critiquing this film to death, please give us a call, 631-632-9872. I'm going to go into delay, and hopefully I'll do it smoother than I did last week. And we're going to try North Korea again and see if we have any better luck with that. And our number again, 631-632-9872. Give us a call.
Hi, this is Alan Toussaint, and you're listening to WUSB, Stony Brook.
And we're back. At least I hope we're back. Well, we'll see in a second. It's 6:42 p.m., I'm a little bit distorted. I'm trying to fix that in the future. All right. Let's take a phone call, and we'll try North Korea in just a little bit. Good evening, Aaron, off the wall.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's good to hear you analyze the film, which I haven't seen yet, and I don't really plan on seeing
it. Well, I hope it wasn't because of anything I said that you're planning on not seeing it.
No, I probably will see it on TV, you know, like months from now. What did I see the other day? Something that was like a... Oh, I saw Rocky Balboa.
Ah.
In a Rocky movie. You know, I never would have seen that, but it was on TV. And
have you ever seen the original Taking Apollo 1-2-3, the one from 1974?
Movies. One of my all-time favorite. Walter Matthau.
Yes.
It was like my... I love that film. I love the original.
That film is as perfect as a film can be. It just gets everything right technically, dialogue-wise. You don't have this flashy, you know, three-second-long scenes where you have to keep people's attention span from drifting. It's just a fascinating film to watch and a great ending, too. An absolutely great ending that takes you to the very last second, you know?
I don't have it on TV anymore. It used to be on, you know, fairly often. You could see it on Channel 11 or something, but I want to see the original again.
Someone told me it was on CW, which is Channel 11, only on Sunday. But you know what? There's no substitute for having the DVD, having it uncut, uncensored.
Definitely. You know, also, when you were talking about, you know, the hijackers and things like that, I started to flash onto 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
My many problems with that plot, if you want to call it.
Okay, so we're going to get into the 9/11 truth thing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Building 7, the Pentagon hole too small.
Mm-hmm.
But why were no planes scrambled? How did the most well-defended airspace in the world...
Tell me, do you believe all of those
hijackings?
But do you believe every single plane has its own conspiracy thing going on? Because those are all separate types of conspiracies. You know, not scrambling the Air Force and a hole not being big enough in the Pentagon and Building 7 falling down and what happened to the flight over Pennsylvania. You know, they're not the same kind of inconsistency. Do you think maybe one of them is true or all of them are true?
I think one of them could be true.
Okay.
I just think that, you know, the collapse of the two towers happening at free fall speed and the fact that the concrete was completely pulverized and the squibs, metal stanchions of the buildings were ejected in the fashion that they were, appear to be a demolition, an internally planned demolition.
The question I always ask then is, then why bother with the planes? Why not just destroy the buildings and say, hey, who did that, you know?
Yeah, I think but then they wouldn't have the justification for airport screening security and the extent of the surveillance and security that's been put in place since. I think it was orchestrated. That's what
I
understand.
Why was it so important for the towers to fall? I mean, if the planes just went into the towers, they'd be messed up enough where they couldn't use them anymore, even if they didn't fall down. And if they fell down in an uncontrolled way, that is, tipping over and destroying more buildings in the process, wouldn't that be all the better for the people plotting this kind of thing?
I don't think so. I think the way that it worked according to the way they had designed it to maximum efficiency.
And when is the last time you ever saw the government or any kind of federal bureaucracy do anything that perfectly? You know, somebody always says something or they mess something up or they leave out a detail. That's my biggest problem with the whole thing is it's too perfect.
I think that there's, you know, that question comes up, you know, why haven't people spoken? How come there's no, you know, it never could have worked. Somebody would have spoken and all these things. It doesn't change the basic fact that I see these towers falling in a controlled demolition. How it's done, who did it, who didn't speak, who did speak, and, you know, all that, I don't have the answers for. I have nothing.
Okay, well, it's good that you're asking questions, and I hope you continue asking questions and letting people know what you think. We're going to move on to some other calls. Thanks so much for yours. We're at 631-632-9872. I also suggest a program called Why the Towers Fell. It aired on PBS's Nova. You know, if you think that they're part of the conspiracy, too, then okay, but watch it anyway, even if you think that. And that way you can tell us why you think it's wrong. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Turn on your radio, please.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm in Stony Brook, actually, right now.
Stony Brook.
Fort Jeff, excuse me.
Okay, great. What's on your mind?
Okay, real quick, I hear you talking about a Canadian satellite dish. I know this is real
yes.
Easy to find, but I just figured since I had you on the phone. Mm-hmm. Where does one find one of these?
Well, in Canada, obviously. But here's the tricky part. You can easily put a Canadian satellite dish on your roof because the satellites are all over the equator, so the satellite dish doesn't know where you actually are. All it does is pick up the signal. The tricky part about all of this is how do they bill you, and they obviously have to have an address in Canada to bill you. They won't bill you if you're in the United States. They won't sell you the service. If you know somebody in Canada who doesn't already get this service, maybe they have cable or something like that, all you need to do is have them pick this up for you. You pay them, and then they have some kind of a billing plan where either they pay automatically or you pay them every month or something like that. As long as that address is registered with, I think it's ExpressView is one company and StarChoice is the other, you'll be able to pick up that programming, no problem. And you'll get more American TV channels. They have ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox on East Coast and West Coast, so you can see that. You see all kinds of CBC programming, a lot of international things, a lot of French things as well.
Oh, okay, because I know my, I don't really have, I have cable at my house for the internet and for the VoIP phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have television at the house. There's no cable, there's no satellite anymore.
Right.
It's nonsense. And I used to use that as an excuse for when they used to call, hey, you know, they know that you don't have service, so I used to use that as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys don't have enough international programming. And, well, by golly, Cablevision, they've got a lot of international programming.
I got to say, Cablevision does a stunning job as far as diversity of programming. They're the only cable system that has Euronews, has BBC World, and they have, yes, as you say, a lot of international channels as well. So, you know, I'm happy I'm in their region as well because I can see all kinds of things I can't normally see.
I might have to go into this. All right. Can't really think of anything more. I'll let you pick up some more info.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Good luck with that.
A little earlier than normal. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hi. I had a question about the subway, actually.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. When I was in New York City, I rode the subway for the first time in my life, and I was standing on the platform waiting for the train, and then I was just kind of walking around, too, because it was, like, really amazing. But
uh-huh.
I looked across, like, two sets of train tracks, and then on the wall was this elaborate, like, graffiti and stuff like that, like something that I would imagine would take someone like 45 minutes to spray paint.
Was it in a station or between stations?
It was actually like inside, like underground, like, and then I was standing like I don't know if you call that a platform, but I was standing like by the train tracks, and then there was like
uh-huh.
it would go down like
uh-huh.
far down, like maybe a couple of feet, and then there'd be two sets of train tracks and then just a brick or a stone wall.
Did you remember what station this was?
It was close to, I want to say, I don't really remember.
Uh-huh.
It was close to Central Park, actually, because
okay.
that's where I was going at the time.
I mean, there are all kinds of hidden passages and entryways. In fact, that's one of the good things about this film is they tell you about yet another one, which I believe really exists. But there's one section, I don't know exactly where this is, where you can see graffiti that's animated as the train goes by because it's painted in a certain way. And the lights simply catch it as a train is moving, and it's a really cool effect. It looks like animation.
I was wondering how they did it, seeing that a train basically was coming through every 4 or 5 minutes, and you'd have to climb all the way down there.
Right.
And there was no space. If the train came through, you'd be dead, basically.
Well,
there's no space.
You know, you say that, but I've seen workers as a train is going by, and they're sort of scrunched up against the wall. It's kind of scary because you see their faces as the train is going at like 1 mile an hour, and they're squeezing as tight as they can against the wall, and there's room. If you know the system, there's always a place to stand when a train goes by. If you don't know the system, of course, you're going to panic.
Yeah, there's no way that I would ever try that.
No, don't. Definitely don't. I mean,
or 45, 50, 60 miles an hour, something like that. I mean,
they don't go that
fast,
but they're loud and they're scary, and of course the third rail too. The third rail is very, very dangerous. So yeah, please. But it's fascinating to think about and just to realize the incredible vast network that exists under the streets.
Yeah, another thing I kind of wanted to talk about is I think two or three shows ago,
mm-hmm.
It was discussed with the Michael Moore about getting rid of cars and moving on to public
yes,
transportation
yes,
and stuff
piece
like
on his website, yes.
My view on that is that I think you could lose a lot of freedom by doing that, because public transportation is all ran by the government. I think it's a great supplement to cars, but if I want to go to, say, a couple of cities over, the next state over, I can get in my car at 3:02 in the morning or any time I want, you know.
Well, I don't think anyone is saying that that wouldn't be allowed. It shouldn't be as cheap as it is now, and it really is. It's cheaper here than almost any place else on Earth. And what we could be getting instead is simply cleaner, quicker ways of getting around the country. I mean, I'd rather take a train to Chicago than fly to Chicago, but it takes too long. And
right.
other countries, you know, some countries, it is run by the government. Countries like England, for instance, it's private enterprise. But you know what? The British rail system is one of the more chaotic ones because of all the competing companies they have. You know, I think there's a good middle ground here where you can have people driving wherever they want to go, but, you know, paying a fair price for it, but also have a good mass transit system so more people can get around quicker and cheaper.
It kind of depends on the region that you're in, too. Like in New York City, like you're not driving anywhere.
Right, yeah. We're spoiled because we have so many ways to get around at any time of the day or night. But, you know, there's so many other cities, very depressed cities in the Midwest, and I think if there are easier ways of getting both to and from those places, I think they thrive more, and as it is right now, they're rather isolated, you know.
Right, because like where I live, it's so stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much have to drive. Like a train would not be feasible, but in New York, a train is very feasible. Everything's built up, and you know it's a lot better of a city than where I'm from. I mean, you can walk less than a block and always find food or a nightclub
right.
or wherever you're trying to go.
But you know what impresses me, places like Japan and Germany, even those outlying areas, there is a train that goes there and goes there fairly frequently, so you can get from point A to point B to point C pretty easily from at any time of the day or night almost. They don't run things that much at night, unfortunately. But it's just everything is accessible one way or another. And you can buy a ticket from one city in one country to another city in another country, and they can handle this. The computers talk to each other. I can't buy a ticket from here, Stony Brook, to Newark, New Jersey. I have to get off at Penn Station and get on another system and buy another ticket. And it's just the systems, even though they're both run by the MTA, they're not integrated.
Yeah, I would kind of like to see like a interstate rail system, kind of like, you know, how our highways connect everything together now. But
yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Analogously, like a train system that would do the same thing.
Wouldn't it be great to have more freight trains and less 18-wheel trucks all over the place? I mean, I feel for the truck drivers, but maybe they can drive trains instead, you know, or something else.
Yeah, well, at any time in history when something's moving over to a new technology, there are always going to be people that lose jobs, but they just have to be retrained.
It's all about...
They pull back everything just because,
right.
you know, one part of the market would be affected temporarily.
Yeah, it's all about shifting things. I mean, yeah, okay, maybe we're not building as many houses now, but, hey, you know, we can tear down some supermarkets and build something else in their place. There's always going to be work for people to do, always. Listen, sir, thanks so much for calling, and keep exploring.
All right, have a good day.
All right, take care. And yes, I know I made a mistake just now. The train from Penn Station to New Jersey is not MTA. I misspoke. I was thinking more Metro North going upstate or something like that. Okay, so yeah, give me a break on that. All right, you know what? We're kind of out of time here. I didn't get to call North Korea again. Oh, I feel bad about that. And you know, I wanted to talk about Iran, the things going on in Iran. And wow, it's really, we're probably going to talk about this tomorrow night and off the hook a little bit, but. Things are going nuts over there. They really are. After the election results, the rather suspicious election results that I think people aren't accepting as readily as the government would like them to. It's always interesting to see when people wake up and start questioning, especially in a society like Iran, where it's been so oppressive with all the religion being forced down people's throats. Well, you know what? There's a lot of freedom-loving people over there. And again, this isn't the United States, this isn't us doing it, it's the people there doing it. And that's where change happens, that's how communism fell, that's how the Iron Curtain was dismantled, and that's how eventually, hopefully China will get out of its capitalist phase and move into a freedom phase, and things will change in Iran as well. But there's been a lot of interesting technological developments. I think that's what we're going to get into tomorrow, talking about Twitter and Facebook and how all of that basically might have had something to do with it. It's always fun to see how technology works. Anyway, we're out of here. OTW@2600.com is our email address. Keep paying attention to the world. Keep watching the news. Fascinating out there. Good night.
across the way that you came in. But there's no need to get excited as the lorries bring the bacon in, 'cause the housewives are all singing groovy jazz.
Listening to WUSB Stony Brook.